Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today, we're continuing our discussion on AAC. Last week, we had Laura Hayes on, and this week, we have SLP Michelle Diaz. And Michelle is talking about working with students who are bilingual that also use AAC. This is actually something that I sometimes struggled with in the classroom. I had several bilingual students, and I was always worried that I wasn't providing them best practices and the strategies that I was using when bouncing between languages, and then what that looks like on a device. Michelle is an expert in this area. She gives us some great practical advice on how to set up AAC devices, how to give exposure to communication, and what to do if you don't speak the child's native language. So let's go ahead and hear from Michelle Diaz. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you so much for having me in your podcast.
I'm excited to have you because this is a topic that we really haven't discussed on the podcast. So I'm really excited for you to bring your area of expertise on this topic. Today, we're going to talk about bilingualism and how we can best teach communication, increase communication with our learners with autism. A question that I've gotten a lot on this area is, you know, if my child has autism, should we only speak one language? Should we stick with English at home? Is it okay for speaking Spanish in the household? So What is your answer to this? And what does the research really say?
Definitely. Yeah, that's one of the biggest questions families tend to ask. And it is definitely a concern that has been growing in the bilingual households. So I think that this is a great topic to talk about and to clarify, because research actually shows that there is no bad thing in terms of teaching a child with autism two languages. There has been a study done by UCLA actually in 2025, and it was published in the Autism Research, and it shows that there has been no negative effects of bilingual exposure in the population of individuals with autism. Instead, it actually shows that individuals that are learning two different languages show stronger executive functioning skills, such as cognitive flexibility and perspective taking, in children who were exposed to two or even multiple languages. So research is actually showing that it's beneficial to teach children, not only typical developing children, but also children with autism, two or more languages.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. And like, especially some like recent research too. Mm-hmm. I know in my experience, when I was in the classroom, I had a lot of students that were bilingual that spoke Spanish at home and English at school. And yeah, were really, you know, able to fluently switch between languages, or for students that were less verbal, still had receptive skills in both languages. So I'm sure you see that in your practice a lot too.
Definitely. And one thing that I want to clarify is that being on the spectrum of autism does not mean that a child is not smart enough to learn two or more languages. That's totally false. It should be that the child can learn as many languages as they are exposed to in the household. And what matters the most is consistent communication, whether that is in English or in another language. That consistent communication is what's going to be best for that child.
That's a really good point, because you don't want parents to feel like, oh, I shouldn't be communicating in our native language to our child because I want what's best for them. But that's actually gonna do the opposite if you avoid communication.
Exactly. And that also goes with the child's culture, identity, and relationships with their families. So obviously being exposed to that second language and learning that second language allows them to find themselves a little bit more in their culture and their values. So it's part of who they are.
Yeah. You know, and that's actually one thing I really liked about your Instagram page is you talk a lot about culturally responsive care. What does that look like for you in practice with the families that you work with and the students you work with?
Definitely. Yes. So whenever a family comes in for the first time, or whenever I first meet a family and their child, the first thing that I want to ensure is that I am upholding the family's language, culture, and values in the intervention process that I'm conducting as a speech therapist, because language is more than just getting wants and needs met. It's actually part of their home routine, their cultural identities. So that's something that I always want to value and uphold as a speech therapist, because language is part of who we are, and I want to ensure that they are accessing the vocabulary that they need in one language or multiple languages. So that's something really important, especially with children that have autism. If I need to add in a language to their AAC device, that's something I want to know right away.
Okay, so speaking of AAC devices, when a child is using an AAC device and comes from a bilingual household, are there special considerations that you make? What are some things you do in practice? Are you putting both languages on the device? What does that look like?
Yes. So one thing that I do when I'm talking to the families, when I first met them, when they come in, is that I either have them fill out a sheet prior to coming in, just so then I already have all that information. And if not, then when they come in, they can tell me if they use different vocabulary in terms of maybe for foods, they have a specific name for cheese in the household. So if they are speaking two or more languages, then I want to make sure that I create a different page that has the language that they use at home. For example, I work a lot with the Spanish-speaking populations, and all of these kids basically have a page in English and a page in Spanish, and the pages translate. So it's the same icon in both pages, just different language, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think it's good to like visually think about what that looks like, that there's, yes, this page with food items in English and food items then in Spanish.
Yes, and that's one thing that also, as a bilingual SLP, in my practice, whenever I am working with these bilingual students, I will switch from page to page, even though, you know, it gets a little hectic at times because it is an AAC device and you have to click different things. But I want to ensure that they are recognizing the item, having exposure to the vocabulary in both languages, because they are using both pages. So I want that to be consistent both at school and at home.
If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find the right medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's a virtual psychiatric practice that actually fits your life and your insurance. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatric practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management. Unlike therapy-only sites, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means that you'll be seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when appropriate. All of their over 600 clinicians are in network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly out-of-pocket subscriptions or those out-of-network fees. Head to talkiatry.com/Sasha and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/Sasha to get matched in minutes.
Do you ever get feedback or kind of concerns from teachers that like, oh no, is that going to be confusing? And then how do you address that with them to ensure that like it, that we can still learn both?
Definitely. Yeah. That's something that it continues to be not, I don't want to call it a hurdle, but something that we continue to work towards, that understanding that having that exposure is beneficial for these students, and educating my colleagues, educating the teachers that I work with, and also teaching them how to use the device when I'm not there. In terms of food is a big one, because when the students are eating snack, I want to ensure that they are able to request exactly what they want. And maybe at home, they call it a different thing than they call it at school. So that's when I teach the teachers or the teacher assistants how to access both languages on their AAC device. So then the student can know exactly what they want to request and work towards that. So there's definitely a lot of education that I provide to my colleagues.
Yeah. I mean, you think about AAC on its own needs so much training and education, but also bilingual education as well. And I liked your example earlier of like, yes, I'm bopping between pages and that takes more time and effort, but exposing to both languages is essential. And I thought of in that moment, like a really great ESL teacher is going to speak in two languages. And that's kind of the same thing you're doing with the device.
Definitely. And one thing that bilingual students that are typical developing do a lot is code switch between languages. So they might start a sentence in English and then end it in Spanish. And that's one thing that I want to also provide to my students that have autism that are nonverbal, just because they're nonverbal and cannot code switch verbally, that doesn't mean that they cannot do it on their device. So that's one thing that I'm always pushing for, in terms of like, it's okay if they request one thing, or if they say one thing in English and then they say another thing in their second language, like, totally okay. That doesn't mean they have to stick to one language the whole day.
And I think, like you said earlier about teaching your colleagues and new teaching assistants, that we're just valuing communication, not like, oh, well, you didn't say it in English, you can't have it.
Exactly.
Yeah. When working and supporting students that are bilingual and have autism or other diverse learning needs, what are some other practical strategies that you do within a classroom setting to support communication in both languages?
Yeah, so one thing that I've also been working on is during circle time, whenever we're all in the group and we are not only requesting things, but more so commenting, like we are saying hello to our peers. We go around and, you know, say hello to each one. And I make sure that each individual student is able to access their AAC device and say hello there. So more than just requesting, also greeting, saying goodbye or saying good morning during circle time, or when we have surprise box, we also practice on saying like open the box. So more than just requesting, more than just saying, I want, you know, because I feel like that's pushed a lot on these students, on these individuals with autism, I also want them to go beyond that and use their device in any sort of setting. So I also bring it to the playground. If they want to go on the swing and they want swing, then it's on their AAC device. So they can press swing, let's go on the swing. They want me to push them on the swing more than they can say more on their device. So I really try to make sure that their device is used in every setting that they're in.
That's such a good point. And I like that you like recommended ideas like morning circle or recess. Like those are routine based part of the days. And I think sometimes we get stuck on snack and lunch because it's like, oh, this is an easy routine. They're motivated. But there's also a lot of other motivating routines within the day.
Exactly. Totally agree. And, you know, sometimes you just have to make things up and make them a little bit fun for them to be engaged. Like the surprise box, they tell me open. They tell me the sometimes I put like different activities there that are like colorful. So then they tell me what color they want, or they tell me close the box when we're all done. Mm-hmm. So these are more than just like, I want this, I want that. It's actually embedding their AAC device into just a normal everyday activity that they do.
What do you respond to teachers or other kind of educators that might be hesitant to use AAC because they think it's going to diminish verbal language?
Yeah, I've had that actually happen more with parents more so than with teachers, just because I feel like there has been a lot of education now on AAC device. But yeah, I've had some pushback on AAC, and research actually shows that AAC promotes language and growth of vocabulary in individuals with autism. So oftentimes having that visual that's on the AAC device paired with that verbalization that it provides whenever you press on the visual, that allows them to expand their vocabulary too, because you are also modeling on their AAC device when they are doing different activities. So then they are learning that, oh, this is a stuffed animal. Oh, this is an elephant. Now their vocabulary is expanding so much more since you are providing that expressive language and that visual paired with that model. It just allows them to understand language a lot more and allows them to also then imitate that model that you're providing, and now they're using that language that you're modeling. So then it just increases language
all the way around.
That's a great
way to put it, because we sometimes hear that pushback but we're like, actually it's gonna help, don't worry. And I do understand, you know, a parent is of course going to always be worried and want what's best for their child. Kind of going back to this, kind of as you were talking earlier, I was thinking about this. When it comes to AAC devices and setting up buttons and in two different languages, I can hear someone listening thinking like, well, I don't speak the child's native language. Like I don't speak Spanish or I don't speak Mandarin. What is your advice there when you don't speak the child's native language? Technology has made it a lot easier on us on translating things, right?
Definitely, yes. So I do have some monolingual teachers and teacher assistants that work in the classroom where there are a lot of children that are bilingual. And a lot of the times when a child might be requesting in a language that's not English, then a lot of the times the teachers will look at the visual or like look at the picture, and then they can just like wrap their head a little bit on what the child is saying. So having those visuals, actually they're helpful for both the child and the teachers, honestly. But other than that, I would say, you know, if you are speaking in English, then model in English. Like, obviously, we want the modeling of language to continue. I don't want anybody to think like, oh, just because I don't speak their language, I cannot model language for this student or show them on their device where they have to access that vocabulary. So I would say to continue to do it in the language you feel most comfortable in. But if the student responds in the language they feel most comfortable in, then continue that conversation, because I wouldn't like you to push towards English only just because you don't understand both languages.
I really like that advice, because it feels like we're still being respectful to the child, mm-hmm. and like the and honoring the communication they feel most confident in, but also like that theme that you've kind of been interpreting or in integrating into everything is like the more communication, the better. Kind of matters less on the language and more just the exposure.
Exactly. And it's just like when we are in person and someone is trying to get their point across to us, and we might not be understanding what they're saying, but we use our gestural cues, the way they are, you know, using their hand gestures or their facial expressions. Well, that's the same thing for someone who is nonverbal. If they are, you know, using the language they feel most comfortable in, well, we can look at the visuals that that language has, and for us to understand with those like visual cues what they're trying to say. So yeah, thinking a little bit outside the box.
Yeah, the visual helps everyone. And, you know, I love that there's so many like AI tools and tools embedded into our AAC softwares, mm-hmm. that will translate things for you.
Definitely.
We don't always have to bring a translator in necessarily. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. This has been so interesting to think about, because I think a lot of teachers are in classrooms, especially with early learners where there are children that speak multiple languages. So this has been so informative to learn about best practices in this area. Where can people go to learn more from you?
Yeah, so I actually have a website, and my website is called MichelleDiazSLP.com, and there you can access all of my links, and you can also email me if you would like more information about a specific topic or have specific questions about what we just talked about. And yeah, we can get connected through there.
Awesome. Thank you, Michelle. I'm going to link your website in the show notes. And thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest. Or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum, everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher. We have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.